Pretty much.
All right, let's get started. I'm very hungry. I should have ate before we started recording. It's the hangry episode.
We'll keep it tight. I don't think we're gonna have a lot to talk about. Welcome to Movie the Podcast. That's right, Movie the Podcast. It's John Goodmarch setting itself up to be just an outstanding month. We're fresh out the gates with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yeah, what a pleasant viewing experience.
TJ's here.
Yes.
Alex here. Sean pulled a double and is sucking his dad's dick factory. Yeah, so
Sean is unhinging his jaw like a king cobra, just sucking down dick.
Yeah. But let me tell you something. TJ kind of already touched
on it. Is it about sucking dick?
It's not, but Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, from cover to cover, just like the biggest smile on my face the entire time I'm watching this movie.
Yeah, this movie flies.
Oh yeah,
it moves at a clip.
What is the runtime of this movie? 10 minutes?
It's full 2 hours.
It does not.
It feels like an hour 48. But I don't know that I can think of any movies this long that I felt like just flew by, like that I wasn't watching in the theater. It's insane. Like it starts, it ends. It's oh my god. We'll talk a lot about it, but goddamn.
I had a bit of a revelation. Like, I think I've seen this movie. I think we've probably already seen, like, I think I've seen this movie like 10 times or more. I think we probably all have.
I saw this when it came out on VHS or DVD when I was the summer after high school, when I tore my ACL, and I was telling TJ the other day, like every week, my mom would take me to Hollywood Video and I would rent like 5 or 6 movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd watch them all and we'd take them back. That summer, I watched a lot of movies. I watched, actually, several podcast movies. I watched this. I watched Zoolander for the first time that summer. I watched
That's a big Alec movie. When I think of Zoolander, I think of you.
The Way
of the Gun. That's such a good movie. I watched The Way of the Gun that summer.
I was thinking about this, like, watching this movie this time around, and then we'll get into everything else, but, like, and stop me if you think this is a silly comparison, but like this movie in a weird way reminds me a lot of Pulp Fiction, because it's a lot of vignettes and like small stories. And then the very end, it all ties together.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't think that's that crazy of a comparison. I mean, it's also like, it's a movie that is epic in scale, but tells it in little small chunks. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like it's an interesting movie because it's an odyssey, you know, but it is told in a very small way. It's interesting. But anyway, let's get into the other stuff. We'll talk about Oh Brother, Where Art Thou momentarily. So what did y'all watch this week? Sean's not here. All he watched was hours and hours of himself sucking people's dicks because he records it. That's what he's into.
Don't I watched 3 things.
I'm pro kink shaming, by the way. I'm tired of being against it.
All right,
I'm sorry. Enough. If you like feet, you're fucking weird. I mean,
no argument, but still.
Right.
I don't like feet, but I'm not against them. Like, they're fine.
I acknowledge feet's necessity, but I do not find them to be
sexual. Lop them off. Lop them all off.
Yeah, everyone should get blades or rollerblades.
Everybody should be like Return to Oz.
Sophia Boutella in The Kingsman.
Much more than that.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's all get Oscar Pistorized. So,
not all the way.
Not all the way, right. Watch out, Liz. Don't go to the bathroom in the middle of the night, sweetie. Anywho, so I watched 3 things, 2 of which I had seen before, so I'll keep it real brief. In honor of Helldivers 2, I rewatched Starship Troopers. I love it so much. I love that movie so much. So there's nothing really to say about it.
We watched that movie, I don't know, a few months ago. I think we watched it at your house.
Yeah.
Didn't we?
Yeah, I think
so. And I had read the book when I was a kid. And when I watched the movie, I understood that it was a satire, but like watching it now as an adult, I'm like, it's so over the top. And, like, I don't know how I didn't pick up on, like, how explicit the satire was. Like, it's like, God, I'm an idiot.
The part that it took Sean to point it out to me, because I was right in front of my face the whole time, is that all these people are from they're from Buenos Aires, but they're all the whitest of the white, right? So they're all just descendants from Nazis. And that's hilarious.
They
so,
dress anyway, like fucking not like the fucking like what's his name? Doogie Howser's fucking outfit is like literally like a commandant SS outfit. Looks... Like it's not even subtle. It's like
no.
I don't know. It's a great movie though. It's a lot of fun. Also, like in on top of like the great satire on fascism and you know a fascist government and all, the fucking action scenes are done really well. Like the action is a lot of fun.
The CGI is really good for the time. Yeah, like
it I think it holds up actually. Like I think it still holds up pretty well.
It's a comfort movie for me. It's up there with like RoboCop 2 and Predator 2. So yeah, I watched that. And then I watched another movie that's very
there's been a lot of talk of Starship Troopers because of Helldivers. So a detail I never really, I mean, I guess I noticed, but I never really like picked up on it, that every person like over 30 is like deformed or like completely fucked up. Like I never picked up on that, but it is absolutely true. Like everyone is, if they are over 30 years old, they are all fucked up. Like obviously there's that really obvious one where the guy's like, you know, the Marine Corps or whatever made me who I am. And
mobile, he's in a the mobile industry
made me who I am. And he's in a wheelchair and like that one. But like everyone has like scars or is like completely like messed up. I'm like, oh, that's pretty interesting. Yeah, it's a war based
economy.
Oh yeah. Well, much like our own.
So I watched that, loved it. And then I watched another movie about a war based economy. I rewatched, Conan the Barbarian, and
oh, I love that movie.
Man, that's that movie's good.
That's such a good movie.
It's so over the top, and like, it's just, it's super, super enjoyable.
It's,
so
there's something like charming about like a really janky like fantasy movie, because that movie has like so much jank, like so much fun.
It's janky, and it's like, and like, oh, now I can't think of his name. I almost said Edward James Olmos. No.
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Nope. Darth Vader. Can't think of his name.
Oh, James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones is Thulsa.
He's in the second one.
No, he's in the first one. He's Thulsa Doom in the first one.
No. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
Oh, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. That's correct. He's in the second movie.
He's in the second one.
But him is Thulsa Doom with that just luxurious hair, and he's just super arch. It's just
awesome.
So, you know, and like,
you have the girl that's not Red Sonja, but is kind of supposed to be Red Sonja.
Yeah,
and then Arnold's in Red Sonja, which was always confusing to me as a kid. Because I was like, wait,
universe, is it not?
In the comics it is, but not in the movie. Like in the movies, it's like they were kind of hinting at it, but it's not. Yeah, but
yeah, so I believe
both are Robert E. Howard creations. Also, if you want to watch a really weird movie, Vincent D'Onofrio there's a movie about Robert E. Howard that Vincent D'Onofrio plays Robert E. Howard, and Robert E. Howard was like a fucking weirdo. Like he was like, he lived with his mom, and like he was fucking just a weird like recluse. But I can't remember the name of the movie, but I look it up. It's really good actually.
Anyway. Then the third thing I watched was something Alec had talked about a couple weeks back. I watched Next Goal Wins.
I want to watch that. I forgot to watch that.
Loved it. It was just like, I'm like, it's like, we all know I'm a sap. So like, whatever. But it's like.
But that's why we love you.
But it like tugs on the heartstrings, and like the end of them, like all the people from American Samoa are just like, all of those characters are just so charming and like lovely. And Fassbender's great in it, and I don't know. It was I really, really, really enjoyed it. It was quite good. Yeah, I don't know if it would have made it into my top five or not, but it definitely would have been on the top 10 probably of last year. I really, really liked it. I thought it was really
good.
I need to watch it.
I forgot. I keep forgetting to watch it.
Taika Waititi just like, he does it again. Like it's got a lot of heart.
My Plex has turned into Netflix, where I only look at my recently addeds, and once like it gets past,
once it's
like,
out of sight, it's done.
It's so bad. I was like, oh my God, I've become my own worst enemy. Like, what the fuck?
But anyway, that's everything I watched. Three very enjoyable movies. TJ.
Well, one thing I watched is Tabled. It's the big thing that we need to talk about this week. But I watched a documentary on HBO that called they called him Mostly Harmless, which
interesting name.
Well, it's kind of an interesting documentary, and then it's just really boring. Like it's so basically, the story is they find this guy in the fucking woods, right? And he's dead, and he's like emaciated, and like he's like starved to death. But he had like food around, but then he had all these journals with all this weird like code and shit on it. You're like, the first like 10 minutes, you're like, oh, this is fucking wild. Like, okay, I'm in. What the fuck happened? And right. Then the other thing that's kind of interesting is I know none of us here are hikers, but are you guys familiar with the world of like long distance hikers? Because I was not. So there are people that literally walk the entire Appalachian Trail, which starts what up here in Maryland and it goes all the way to Florida.
It goes from almost
in Canada.
It's like Tennessee Maine.
Okay. No, like, I think it goes south because they
it's the Appalachian Mountains, bro. It's like it ends in like.
Well, maybe I got the wrong trail. There is a trail that goes south because this guy died in like somewhere in the south. It may be not the Appalachian, perhaps, but maybe another trail. I can't remember.
Like, I know.
My point is, I this shows you how bored I was with the documentary because I didn't pay much attention. There is a trail that is like people walk it every year, but it's somewhere like it's on the East Coast, but it's probably
the Appalachian Trail because there's a season for that. Like you have to start at a certain time, otherwise you'll get snowed out. And like it was either my brother-in-law might have done it, and like I know some other people have done it. You need to like a buddy of mine named Tom I used to work with. He did it. You had to mail yourself supplies and time the packages. Where you are going to be at that time so you can resupply.
So, yeah. So, okay. So, anyway, so they have this whole, like, ecosystem of these people that do these long-distance hikes, right? And people adopt trail names, which is something I didn't know. So, like let's say, like, Gogs, you, like, walked down the trail and you got, like, a shiny boot. You'd be called Shiny Boot. That would be, like, they introduced this one woman as a trail angel. Like that is something I'm supposed to fucking know what it is. And apparently a trail angel is just like a trail, like a trailer groupie that just brings supplies to people that hike these trails.
Okay. That tracks.
So anyway, the first half of this movie is like super interesting. Cause it's like, it introduces this murder or well, not murder, it introduces this death. And then, it talks about this whole like subculture I had no idea about. And then it just gets really boring. And it's about like us wanting to disconnect from fucking society. And like, it's just like, it loses me. It lost me so fast. I fell asleep. So I don't even know how the guy died. Cause I was,
So you got no resolution.
No, I don't know. Like he was some kind of like tech guy. Like he was like a Silicon Valley guy. And he was like a coder, like he like the code that they found was like some kind of like software code for some weird, like it's some game that you can buy on Steam, but like it's like made for coders. And it's like, I don't know. This is the part of the documentary that lost me so hard. I fell asleep. And I don't know. He just wanted to completely disconnect from the world and then somehow ended up dead. I do not recommend they call him Mostly Harmless because I found the first 20 minutes riveting and then the rest of it, I fell asleep.
You found it mostly boring.
I found it mostly. Bravo. Yes. Damn it. There's your Letterboxd review right there.
Well, it's the movie's fault if it lost you that bad. Cause it sounds like an interesting premise. But
and like, this was at like, Gogs, this is not like when my usual MO of falling asleep during a movie. Cause I started at fucking 11:30 at night on Saturday. My friend, I started this at like,
the sun was up. Like, was it like,
literally, I had like a light lunch and I sat down to watch this movie and I fell asleep. I was like, oh my God.
But you weren't inspired to just even Google what happened to get the resolution. Okay, then that's the movie's fault. That's the movie's fault. That's not your fault.
I didn't give a shit. I remember I was like, well, I didn't find out why or how that guy died. And I was like, I don't give a shit.
There you go.
That's all I watched. Alec.
I watched four things before the tabled thing.
Ooh.
Four things.
I watched Pootie Tang.
Lovely. Hell yeah, Sarate.
Lance Carruthers, Pootie Tang. Solid movie written and directed by Louis C.K.
Yeah.
Weird.
Canceled.
Like super weird. Well, he's uncanceled now, isn't he? Well, not uncanceled, but he just powered through it.
We're all okay with it now.
Yeah.
He just powered through it.
I mean, there is like worse. I guess people realize there's like worse people in the world than just some creep. Like, I don't know. I always jerk off in front of Gogs, and he really enjoys it. So, I mean, I don't know. But I always ask him first. Also, there's no power dynamic between me and Gogs.
So. That's the key. The power dynamic and the consent.
Yeah. Yeah. Gogs is technically more powerful than me in a physical sense. So, I guess, in a way, that is the imbalance. So.
Right. But emotionally, I'm much weaker. So, it's a different, right?
We're a real master blaster combination. The two
he has the mind of a child.
But yeah, Pootie Tang is fantastic.
Outstanding. I love that movie. It's so good. Underrated. Like completely underrated.
Underrated.
It's one of those movies that I felt like TikTok would bring back. You know what I mean? Because it's like it is a cult of a cult hit. You know what I mean? Like I feel like even amongst like guys like us, like I feel like people don't give it enough respect. Like
I think it's one of those movies where there's no middle ground. You're either like you dismiss it or you absolutely love it. There's no.
I remember loving it immediately. I didn't see it in the theater, but I saw it as soon as it came out on DVD, and I was like, "This is fucking hilarious." Big fan.
Next up, shit. Where my thing go? Semi pro. Gog's favorite.
Hell yeah. Oh, Gog's favorite, man. Movie.
I like that. What's wrong?
Nothing. Nothing is wrong with it. It is just, it is weird. And Alec and I already talked about this briefly. There's nothing wrong with it, Gog's. It's a fine movie, but like, you love it to a level that no other person loves semi-pro. And it's fine. I have no problem with it. It's fair. You know.
I believe you've been on record saying it's your favorite Will Ferrell movie.
I believe that's correct.
Yeah, and that's wild.
How can that be possible in a world with Talladega Nights? I don't know.
Yeah,
I know. I found myself quoting. It's funny you bring this up. I found myself quoting that movie to myself apropos of nothing this weekend. I was like, who the fuck are you calling a jive turkey? No, he called you an asshole. He called you an asshole.
No, he called you a motherfucking cocksucker.
You know, that's
hilarious.
It's a fine movie. It's not terrible. It's not bad.
No, it's not bad.
But like compared to like Anchorman, the first Anchorman, Talladega Nights, like it's definitely, I'd put it a tier below that. But
it's on par with Blades of Glory, in my opinion. It's on that level for me. And I like Blades of Glory, too. That's not an insult.
It's funny how many sports movies Will Ferrell has ended up doing.
Well, it's because he's got a weird, lanky, funny body. Like, it's funny to watch him do athletics because he's got a weird frame because he's big. Like, I think he's, like, really tall, isn't he?
He's like 6'3", I think. 6'4".
Yeah, he seems really tall. But he's kind of, like, lanky and weird. I think Sean watched it. Didn't we just watch that documentary where he played like professional baseball? Like
He went through like the during spring training, he went through like the Arizona Cactus League and played on a bunch of different teams and got like one at bat on a bunch of different games because you can drive like it was all apparently all in one day, but you can drive to a bunch of different just like the spring training in Florida.
You can
hit a bunch of different stadiums within like so many hours of each other. And he was just going from place to place and he got these at bats. I think he went like 2 for 10 or something like that.
Is this before he was famous or is this just lark? Okay.
This was definitely post fame.
Yeah.
I think it's an HBO special.
Okay. Yeah, I need to watch it. I meant to watch that when it came out years ago.
Watched a movie. This movie is something else. It's called Deadly Adoption.
What a name!
It stars Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig. It is a Lifetime movie.
Oh,
that
wow.
It is filmed and acted just like a Lifetime movie. There's no comedy. There's no, like, well, there's no intentional comedy. There's no, like, winks and nods to the camera or anything. Like, they legit, in secret, like, 10 years ago, they made this movie. And it's been released for a while. And, like, they denied that they made it until it, like, released.
Oh, shit. That's wild. How did you even hear about
ridiculous.
This?
Ridiculous. Stacy heard about it on TikTok, and we watched it a couple of weeks ago, and I forgot about it. But, like, it's fucking wild. And it's so strange. And, like, it's not good, obviously.
Well, obviously.
But, like, Kristen Wiig plays a woman who is pregnant, and she loses the baby. Will Ferrell's her husband, and he's, like, a writer for a money management writer. He's, like, a successful, I don't even know who you'd compare him to, Susie Ormond, maybe, or somebody like that. Like, he's made a fortune in books, basically. Hmm. And she can't have any more kids after that, but they have one kid already. But they find this woman who is going to put her kid up for adoption. So they meet her. They want to adopt her kid. She has a really shitty situation, so they invite her to live with them. And she ends up being like a murderer. But it is insane. And I really don't know how I feel about it. Because it's not right. good. right. And it's not funny.
Is it like a straight thriller drama? Like,
it attempts to be. But just like all those Lifetime movies, it's terrible. There's no actual like thrills or drama. Because you don't care enough about the people to
right.
feel anything. Because it's just a schlock stock movie. It's something, though. I would recommend it for a watch. At least some of it. Maybe not the whole thing.
It's so weird. It seems like some kind of comedy, anti-comedy project. Like, this sounds like something like
Tim Andy Heidecker. Kaufman-esque. Yeah.
Well, it sounds like something like Tim Heidecker would do. Like, Tim Heidecker, the first movie he made that wasn't like Tim and Eric's billion dollar movie, he made that movie The Comedy, which is like a really weird, like, mumblecore movie that like wasn't funny at all. And it was like, I felt like that was kind of the like meta contextual joke of the whole thing. Like, I don't know, it's a very odd movie, and I feel like this kind of seems the same.
When you were watching it, Alec, were you watching it like I watched Fast Food Nation? Like, you were waiting for it to get funny and it just never got funny?
I wasn't sure how they were going to play it, but yeah, I was kind of waiting for like some kind of joke.
It's still hilarious to me that that's how you watch it. Like, you were like, when's the jokes happening? And then Wilder Valderrama, like, gets his arms ripped off in the fucking meat thrasher.
I felt the same way, man. That movie was marketed like Thank You for Smoking. Like, it was the same movie. It wasn't
it's
marketed.
It's like Red Kinnear in it, and I was like, oh,
I read the book, so I guess that was the problem.
Like, yeah, I was waiting for the comedy to start.
Yeah, that's like one of the weirder, that's what's his name? That's a Richard Linklater movie. That's one of the lesser Linklater movies.
A Linklater.
The last thing I watched before the table thing, I watched Guardians 3 again, and that movie still slaps.
A movie Gogs hates.
I need to revisit. I haven't revisited it yet.
I don't know. Gogs must have, like, I don't know, found a bump on his dick or something that day, because I don't get it. Like,
yeah, we need to find time for a viewing party with Gogs.
There's two things I just will never understand: Alec not liking Turbo Kid and Gogs not liking Guardians 3. I just don't understand it. I do have
something to bring up from that slump I was in when I watched Guardians 3.
I think you brought it up already, didn't you?
No. I have a fresh thing. Guardians 3.
Okay. But
at that same time, I'd also been watching John Wick 4, and I just saw an announcement for John Wick 5, and spoiler alert, he dies at the end of John Wick 4. So, like, what the hell? Like, it's going to retroactively make John Wick 4 worse for me, because, like, I saw there was...
Well, maybe
like,
it's a prequel. Maybe.
No. The promotion material shows him sitting up out of a grave. So I'm like,
happening? I still haven't seen 4, and generally I've heard it's pretty good. I don't know why. I just haven't gotten around to watching it. But like, that was my problem with 3. Like, it was like, it felt like they were just like, oh, here he comes again. Like, it was like, all right. But
yeah, maybe they should make it like a they should start ramping it up more and make it like Crank.
Make it like
Fast and the Furious.
They inject straight adrenaline into his brain or something.
Here's what they need to do. They need to make John Wick 5, just turn it into fucking cyberpunk, and John Wick's consciousness is put into a biochip and then put in somebody's brain. There you go.
And then it reverts back in time, and he's Johnny Mnemonic.
He could be Johnny Silverhand from Cyberpunk.
And then that's the it's like what they did with Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. The end of John Wick 5.
Oh, yeah.
Johnny Mnemonic. And you're like, whoa.
That would be fucking awesome. Also, Hollywood, make some cyberpunk movies. People are the genre is ripe to make some more cyberpunk.
People are gnawing at the bit.
If you gave me a good cyberpunk movie, like from like the video game cyberpunk, I would be so on board. Like, oh my God. Like, sign me up.
Yeah. The last thing I watched is the table thing. We watched Dunk 2.
Dunkachino. Kids from still 7 dunking. To 17. We watched Denis Villeneuve's Dune 2. Part 2. I keep seeing people call it Dune 2. It's not. It's Dune Part 2. Also, Dune Tune will always remind me of Groundskeeper Willie saying downtown, Dune Tune. Alec was nice enough to take me out of my birthday.
It's not bad.
Yeah, I loved it. I think it's amazing. I personally, I mean, I think I've talked about this on the show before. I am an enormous fan of the books. I think I'm such an enormous fan of the books. I think it's spread to Gogs. I am so annoying with my love of the books that I had an ex-girlfriend of mine who also became a rabid fucking Dune lunatic, and she was like, God damn you. She's like, you talked about them all the time, so I had to read all the books. And I love the movie. I said it to Alec. My only thing is that I'd love to watch... Oh, shit. I watched Dune Part 1 also. I didn't get into that, but I watched them. So we watched Dune Part 2, and then I went home and watched Dune Part 1 again. But I want to watch them immediately back to back. I want to watch them, you know,
one sitting.
Part one ends, part two begins. I think that this movie is it because Gogs, you asked me this via text. Is it better than the first one? And I think it is, but like it almost feels just like the second part of the movie. So it doesn't really feel like it's to me. It's almost unfair to compare the two because it really does feel like one film to me. And I like this one because it leans into a lot of the book people. I'm going to make a reference to a lot of the book people talking about this movie, but a lot of book people complained. There's a lot of changes in this from the book, and I'm not going to get into the changes, but I'll just say that if you're familiar with the books, they changed quite a bit in the second part. But a lot of book people complained that the first movie wasn't fucking weird enough because Dune is fucking weird, and it gets weirder and weirder as it goes. The second part of this movie gets fucking weird. There is weird shit that happens, and I loved it. And I loved the, you know, before we started recording, we talked about how one of the biggest challenges you have from page to screen is it's hard to take what's on the written page and translate it into something visual, right? And you can't do what we've seen in so many bad movies where you're literally just pointing at the camera and talking and explaining what's happening. But I think Villeneuve does an amazing job at visually representing some really whacked out concepts. And, you know, I don't know how well it translates to non-book people. Like, you know, I know Alec, like me and him talked a lot about it after we watched it. He was a little fuzzy on certain parts, but I think maybe in a rewatch, I think he picked stuff up. But I personally thought that he did such an amazing job adapting just some really, really difficult things. And I thought that the scale of the movie was amazing. Like, there's some just incredible shots and set pieces. There is a part in this movie that I thought was so fucking cool that I was like, how did they do this? And then I come to find out that
they shot it with infrared cameras. Alec, you remember the scene, the gladiator scene on DD Prime in the Harkonnen's homeworld, where you get introduced to Fade Rotha? You know how that looked all washed out in black and white? So the idea for that is GD Prime's sun is black. So all of their lights are, that's how they see things when they go outside. That's why later on in that scene, when you see Fade Rotha and Lady Finring, they have like normal, like, I mean, they're still pale, but you see color. When they go outside during the day, that's what it looks like, because their sun is black. So they have this oppressive black sun over their fucking planet, which, again, incredible, like fucking incredible. And this scene looks so fucking cool, like the design, the fucking scale of it, like, oh my God. And then you come to find out that they shot the whole thing in infrared cameras, so it'd give it this really vivid look. And then they went in and they basically fixed all the saturation problems that you have with red light cameras. It's just fucking genius. Like, I don't know how you even conceive doing something like that. And I think the movie's full of shit like that. It's just super creative. Like, Denis Villeneuve is just, he's just on another level. Like, I think he's just, he's one of the best filmmakers that we have, period. Like, I don't know. I was super impressed with the movie, and I can't wait to watch it again. Alec, that's my time. I yield my time to Sir Alec.
I thought coming out of the theater, I thought it was pretty good. Because TJ was glowing about it, and I just,
oh my God,
I still glowing a lot, still. Like he said, there's parts that I'm still unclear on, and stuff that, like, as I'm watching the movie, I didn't understand. But, like, since then, like I was telling him, my TikTok is just full of Dune right now. So I've picked up some things from that. But the biggest thing about the movie that I took away is, like, Timothée Chalamet
is so good.
So he's unreal. I never really thought of him. I never thought he was a great actor. I really honestly don't even know that many things I've seen him in. But I always thought he was just kind of like meh, just like a quiet, a little like soft, kind of frail, sick boy. Yeah. Like, but in this, holy shit.
Yeah, he's like, so good in this movie.
The scene where they're in the caverns and he's like trying to rally everybody, and he just like basically tells everybody, shut the fuck up. What is it,
Muad'Dib? Muad'Dib, yeah. He's Muad'Dib, but he's the Kwisatz
Haderach.
Yeah, he
puts everybody in their place, and he's just like,
spoiler alert, he's actually not.
He's putting, like, there's so much emotion in that scene. Like, I never in a million years would have thought he could get that range, especially in such a short period of, like, that scene, what, with him, that part with him talking is like 2 minutes, and he hits like every emotion you can think of in that 2 minutes, and he nails every fucking bit of it. Like,
and I think he's conflicted too, like at the same time, because you see, like, that scene is kind of the culmination of like everything leading up to it, because he understands that he's about to set off a powder keg if he does that. And it's like, he's like, you can see it in his face. Like, he knows what he knows. It's like the nuclear option, but he doesn't feel like he has any choice. And it's all conveyed through his face. And I'm blown away. I mean, I just, like, Paul is such a tortured character. And it's like, I think it's amazing, like, how he pulled it off.
Everybody's performances of this are just, like, outstanding. The other great scene is the big one-on-one fight at the end, and the two of them are so fucking good. Austin Butler is a fucking hell of an actor. Like, that guy. Yeah,
is that who plays Fade Rotha?
That's Fade Rotha. My only problem with Austin Butler is he's gone into the Tom Hardy school of acting, where he's always got to do some fucking voice. I had a hard time understanding him sometimes, just because, like, the way he modulates his voice, it kind of like melded, words kind of mushed together. I was like, what did you say? Like, I don't know. Again, like, he's great in the movie, though. But
what else is he from? What am I knowing?
He was in that Elvis movie last year. He was in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He plays one of the people that was on the farm. Like, remember the guy that, like gave shit to Brad Pitt? Like, that's Austin Butler. Like, he's been in a bunch of stuff.
He's in that Tom Hardy biker movie coming up.
That looks really good. That's the new Jeff Nichols movie. It's called, like, Bike Riders. It looks fucking badass. Looking forward to that one. But, yeah. But
I definitely want to give this movie another watch. And I definitely want to watch the first one again because I feel like I'll get a better feel for it, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, I think that this is definitely something that will – I think this is something that will definitely help on a second viewing. You know, I feel that.
Oh, Austin Butler's in The Dead Don't Die.
Oh, yeah, he is in that. Yeah.
I need movie. To watch that because I just saw some clips from that pop up on TikTok. And what's his name, is in it too.
It is a very divisive movie. I loved it, but like I think I told you guys, when I saw it in the theater, people were like walking out. It is very weird. Like it is like they're talking about the screenplay of the movie during the movie. Like it's very weird and very like, I don't know, it's a Jim Jarmusch movie. So it, you know, your mileage may vary. I love it though.
That's it. Like Dune 2 or Dune Part 2 fucking.
I can't fucking wait. I can't wait. Give me Dune Messiah, please. Please, 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 please give me Dune Messiah.
Didn't they green light it? Isn't it?
They have soft green lit it. And after this weekend, the movie made $80 million domestically in the box office. It's the biggest Denis Villeneuve opening ever. So, like, I think it's pretty safe to say that they will make Dune Messiah, which will be incredible. Because it just keeps getting, like, these books just keep getting fucking weirder and weirder. And what I was telling Alec is that, whereas, like, I mean, the Dune books, all the Dune books are pretty long. But there's nothing longer than the first book. The first book is a fucking tome. But the books, as they go, get shorter and shorter. So I feel like you could make Dune Messiah into one movie pretty easily. And, like, Children of Dune is relatively short. And then if you get to God Emperor, I mean, I don't even know. Like,
I'll bet you a crisp American dollar that we never see a God Emperor of Dune.
Movie. I mean, that's like the one, right? Like that would be,
That would just be batshit insane. Like there's no,
it's the best book though. Like it's the best of the series. Like I would argue that Heretics and Chapter House, I know that that technically ends the original run, but like they kind of lose steam after God Emperor because that's like the best one. The thing that I was telling Alec, the thing that kills me about the Dune books is that the scale of the Dune books is like nothing I've ever read in fiction because there's so much time passes in those books. By the time you get to Heretics of Doom, which is the sixth book, there's been so much time passed from the first book that the planet's names have changed because it's like 6,000 years into the future. It's like
the planet. I think was it God Emperor takes place 3,000 years after
3,500 years after Dune. Yes.
Which is bananas. Like
when you pick up after Children of Dune, God Emperor explains that Leto II has been emperor for 3,500 years.
Yeah, like the first three books take place in like 50 years, 25 years, yeah, something like yeah. that.
One thing I will say, talking about book changes that I thought was kind of strange, going back to Dune Part 2 briefly, I'm not going to – I could talk a whole episode about the movie. I've loved it that much. So in the book – guys, you read the books. So in the book, Paul has been with – I thought this is what they were going to do. So at the end of Dune Part 1, Paul is basically entrenched with the Fremen. Well, in the book, Paul stays with the Fremen for 2 years.
Like he's a child in the book.
Yeah, well, like, they try to make him out to be kind of a child in this too. They don't ever really explicitly say his age. But you're right, he's much younger in the book. I agree. I think he's 15. And then he's like 18 when he gets out.
Yeah,
something like that. But anyway, in the movie, he's definitely with the Fremen a while. And Alec, if you could probably agree with me on this, it doesn't feel like he was with the Fremen for 2 years, right? Like it feels like he was there for maybe a few months. Yeah, yeah.
It's hard to tell the passage of time.
Yeah.
in it just because there's no like geography or anything. It's all sand.
There's also no like marker. There's no like title card or anything.
Yeah, and they're all like either out in sand or in caves. Like they don't show seasons. They don't. It's hard to like.
Right.
There's nothing marking like the passage of time. I assumed it was probably like 6 months or something like that because she's not showing as pregnant at first when they first get there, but then she's like ready to. She's like showing her belly towards the end of the movie. So I assumed it was like about 6, 8 months or so, but not a couple of years.
Makes sense. But yeah, I thought that was an interesting choice. And that also kind of leads into some other decisions that were made in regards to changes in the book because less time had passed.
Wait, hold on. So wait. In the book, actually, I'm sorry, in the movie, less time has actually passed. They just sped it up.
Yes. Yes. I got it. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if I want to say why. Like, I mean, Chauncey and I guess it's not a spoiler if it's in the book. Well, Chauncey and Paul have a son in the tenure that they are in. He's with the Fremen, and that son is killed with in the Harkonnen attacks.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. So he later on has other children. Also, George Lucas really did rip off everything from Dune I'll shut up. I don't want to spoil the movies.
But wait,
read the books.
I'm very interested in seeing the movie because there's some stuff you told me about it. I'm curious to see how they did it. So
I can't recommend it enough. I think like if you're a fan of the movie, if you're a fan of the first movie, I think you'll love this one. If you're a fan of the books, I think you'll love it. If you're gonna nitpick and say, oh, they changed a bunch of stuff, like I don't think you can't make this movie 5 hours long. Like it's already long, and I feel like they kept the spirit of the book like well enough. Like I think the stuff they changed in the grand scheme of things are kind of minor. I think there's some things that they did include in the movie, which I was kind of scratching my head for. Like they introduced Lady Fenring, who is a character that like doesn't really do anything until the second book. And it's like, okay, like you're kind of strapped for time and you introduce her. Like that's kind of weird. But overall, like I think it's great. And I think it's the best. I mean, unless you have like a television miniseries, you're not going to be able to get every fucking detail. And even then it's tough.
Well, even the sci-fi did it and they pooched it.
Yeah. But they also had like no fucking budget. So, and it's sci-fi. So anyway, it's a great movie. I highly recommend it. If it doesn't make, like, I'm sure it's going to make 2024 top 10, if not number one, it's that good. So, all right, let's get into, we're already going long. Let's get into Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Yep.
Oh, it's great.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have to. We don't. Yeah, we can.
Bang, we're in a tight spot.
Dude, I gotta say it right away. George Clooney's hair. I know it's a point of the character in the film. His hair is beautiful in this movie.
It's top.
He's got just amazing hair. He's got.
It's the whole reason TJ started using pomade instead of gel.
It's not, but it should have been because it is perfect. Like it is beautiful,
man. I don't want to
and
pop.
You know, I do carry a comb with me at all times, and I need to start wearing a hairnet.
I can't use no fop. I'm a dapper damn man.
I love that scene. I love the scene at the end of the movie.
I could probably get you some here in about 2 weeks.
Two weeks.
This place is geographical. Every place is 2 weeks away.
Dude. I'm going to put this out on Front Street. I think this is my favorite George Clooney role.
He's so good in this. Yeah, he's really, really. It's hard. I'm hard pressed to think of a better George Clooney role, and he's got such amazing charisma. Like he just, his charisma just drips off the screen. You know what I mean?
And like, he's so like, he's like kind of caring, but also just so entrenched in himself that like the scene with him and with them and Dan Teague eating lunch the tree.
Yeah,
and he starts beating the shit out of Tim Blake Nelson. He's like, "Well, I don't quite understand what you mean, Dan." Like it's a normal conversation, even though his friend is getting the absolute shit kicked out of him.
Yeah, he's like, "Let me show you a demonstration," and he breaks this giant tree barrens off and just beats the fuck out of Tim Blake Nelson.
Yeah,
oh,
Anyway, Gogs, what happened in this movie? I mean,
it's a lot.
If you've read Homer's Odyssey, it's just that.
I need to. I've never read Homer's Odyssey.
It's Homer's Odyssey mixed with like American iconography. Like it's because like you got Babyface Nelson. You have he's not Robert Johnson. He's got a different name in this, but he's basically Robert Johnson because he sold his soul to the devil to play guitar.
So there was a couple. I did try and Google this. Like obviously the Cyclops and John Goodman, but is there any other and the Sirens, right?
Sirens.
Are there any other characters
This is the first time I picked up on the Sirens.
Really?
Oh, they're supposed to be like the Sirens and the Mermaids. I didn't get that.
When
I was younger.
The one guy is literally named Middleaeus, which I can't believe you didn't pick up on. The governor guy. His name is like. It's like Abraham.
Middleaeus.
So the one guy, his name is like Abraham. They introduce him as like Abraham Middleaeus. I mean,
George Clooney's character's name is Ulysses.
So. Ulysses. I mean, it's stuff like that. It's Homer's Odyssey, by the way. I'm going to make a comparison that like none of y'all are going to really get understand, but. So a lot of fucking nerds get upset that about Neon Genesis Evangelion because they say that they just use religion as like because it's cool, like they just use a lot of religious words and like iconography because it looks cool. That's kind of how this movie is with like Homer's Odyssey. Like they just kind of use it because it's neat. You know what I mean? They use it for like effect. Like I don't think this movie is like incredibly deep. And it's funny because you know, Plex, it shows you like reviews and the handful of negative reviews, which I was blown away by in general. It's like, what the fuck? Like, who, like, did your mother not love you as a child? How do you not like this fucking movie? But they're like, this movie is shallow. And it's like, okay, like, so like it's heartfelt and fun. Like, what's wrong with that? Like, it's not like a deep deconstruction of like Homer's Odyssey. I don't think it's supposed to be like I didn't take it that way at all, you know. Anyway, do we need to do like a plot synopsis?
I mean, I don't know if we need to do a play by play. I think we just talk about some of our favorite parts, right? I mean, like
George Clooney and his gang break out of prison to find a treasure before a dam gets broken and it gets buried under a lake that they're creating. And this is depression. And this isn't reconstruction. It's depression era. Sound.
1937.
Yeah. Depression era, South. And on the way to get to said treasure, George Clooney and his sidekicks encounter lots and lots of strange situations and people who try to help them or hinder them along the way. Starting off with, or do they get, I can't even remember how it starts.
So the first, so
they, I just yeah, watched it today.
The blind
just,
man.
They break blind, out and then
blind
they
man
find
on the train. The
blind man on the train.
Called. You know who that guy is? Oh. You know who that guy is? The blind man. He is the guy that runs the junkyard and It's Always Sunny with Agent Jack Bauer. That's the same actor. Remember that episode with cat over there was born in a pool of gasoline. That's the same guy.
Well, then, so they do that. Then they go to John Turturro's cousin's house.
I love that scene. He's like, I work for no man. He's like, well, maybe if you had a name and the address,
I have no name. Like the George Clooney's character has something to say about everything. And it's,
dude, he's so funny. And I don't know if you guys thought about this, but like we watched Lady Killers, right? And it was terrible. But like, honestly, like there's not a whole lot of difference between how George Clooney talks in this movie and how Tom Hanks talked in Lady Killers. But one works and one doesn't. And I don't know why. Yeah. But like it's very similar. Like I felt like there's a lot of similarities between those two movies. Like, that movie also was like used a lot of music, not to the level of this. I love, first of all, the use of music in this movie is so like captivating and interesting. Like it adds so much to the movie. And in a lot of cases, the music is diegetic, which I think is an interesting choice. Like I don't know. This is a tough movie to talk about because I'm just gushing. Like, I just think, like,
especially when it's set in the 1930s and there wasn't this like radios and boom boxes and car stereos and stuff, but they still find a way to get all the music in there.
Yeah. Like I love the scene where, they're down by the river or whatever. And all those, that mass congregation is getting baptized. And then Tim Blake Nelson like freaks out and wants to be absolved of his sins. But that them all singing and having that spiritual kind of song, I loved it. And I don't know if you guys noticed this, but like they used parabolic mics because you could tell, because when parishioners, I guess that's the right word, right? When they were getting baptized, you could hear the individual people as they were getting dunked. And I'm like, Jesus Christ, like
I noticed the same thing. Like the camera panned down the row, you could pick up individual voices. So like
that means either they were actually recording live, which probably they didn't, or they recorded it to a level where they synced it up perfectly in a studio. It's just beautiful. Like again, like it's just technically amazing. Like I just was very impressed.
Well, there's lots of good, like, just a cappella harmonies and sort of just beautiful, mm-hmm. soulful music that's just it might be my favorite musical.
Well, it's not really a musical. It's not a musical.
I mean, it's not a musical in the sense, but, like, there's a lot of music that happens that's real, like, to the story, right?
If more musicals were like this, where it's just music that propels the story, or is not really propels, but it is music that is crucial to the film, but it's not like people aren't like, I need to go to the store.
Right. Right. It's not Les Mis.
Like, I hate that shit. But this, the application of music in this is fascinating because again, it just adds another layer to every scene in the film. Like, and you know, the choice of the music that they use is great. Like, I don't know. It's just wonderful. And that the Soggy Bottom Boys song is wonderful. Like I don't know. Again, this is gonna be a tough one because it's gush, 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 gush.
I think that like, and Alec already sort of touched on it, but like, there's a scene that I think, and like I said, I think I've seen this probably 10 times, but like, right in the beginning of the movie, like, so the whole time they're being chased by the law because they got off of a chain gang, and
that dude that plays like the head cop, who is that? That guy looks.
He was
so
from like a sitcom.
Familiar.
He was like a principal in a sitcom.
He was in Seinfeld. He was the guy with the skin cancer.
Yes.
Where his family threw George's clothes into the ocean.
Well, there's a scene where like they're in the barn of John Turturro, who's amazing in this movie. Tim Blake Nelson's amazing. They're all amazing. Everyone's amazing. There's not a bad performance in the movie.
That scene where John. Oh, no, go ahead.
Well, I'll be real quick, but like, Alec already said it was like, damn, we're in a tight spot. Like George Clooney says this like 3 times in a row, like as the situation progresses, it gets worse and worse. But there's a time, but he's always doing it on camera. And then there's a time when they throw gasoline on the barn and they throw a torch on it. And so he's not even on camera. So you hear him off camera, kind of in a muted, just one more. Like I'm saying, the whole time I watch this movie, I'm just smiling. I love – there's not a choice that's made in this movie that I think is a bad choice. Like, I really love this movie. So I'm sorry, Alec. What were you going to say?
I was going to say the scene where they – John Turturro hears the sirens and they're driving and just starts losing his mind. He's like all – he's basically doing all the stuff you used to see like in Looney Tunes when somebody fell in love. Yeah, yeah. He's like rubbing his head really hard and like pulling his ears, biting his fist. Like he can't believe that he hears these beautiful sirens. Like this is probably my favorite role that he's had aside from the FBI agent in the Transformers movies.
John Turturro's character, I was like thinking about it. Like Tim Blake Nelson's character is sort of this kind of quiet, soft, loving, whatever. John Turturro's character runs so hot and so cold. Like every emotion he has is in the extreme, and it's great. And then when they break him out, he gets recaptured, and they break him out of the camp.
Yeah, but the part where they they think they didn't like Tim Blake Nelson is convinced that he's dead because he thought he was a toad, which is funny as hell. And then when they drive past him on the other chain gang, and George Clooney's like, did he have a brother? It's like, the son must be doing me dirt. Like, he's like, what the hell? Like, that shit's so funny.
They break him out after he gets recaptured when he's not a toad, and Everett's on Tim Blake Nelson's shoulders to, like, cut the chain, and then all you hear is Tim Blake Nelson go, that's all I got. And then he just collapses, and fucking George Clooney drops to the ground. Like, at Tim Blake Nelson...
Tim Blake Nelson is so good in this.
So good.
This is the first movie I ever saw him in. This is the first role that I ever saw him in. When George Clooney finally catches up with his wife, and you realize there's no treasure that he's just trying to get his wife before she gets remarried. The guy she's remarrying is the lead mechanic from Ford v Ferrari. Pops.
Oh shit! You're right.
It is Pops.
Also, I keep loving the phrase.
They get in that fight in the store, and George Clooney puts up his dukes and gets the absolute dick beat.
He's doing the fucking like.
He's doing the Fighting Irish. He's doing the Notre Dame.
Oh my god! It's so good. He gets hit in the face like five straight times. Yeah, that he gets thrown out. Stay out of the Woolworths.
Do you think it's all the bunches or just the Woolworths?
Also, the daughters in that scene keep referring. You're not even bona fide. I don't know what the fuck that means, but it's fucking hilarious. He's not even bona fide. They like seven different characters say that, and it's just like, what the fuck?
Like, I
love that shit. Oh,
we can just sit here and just glow about this movie, but I think
this is why we don't watch movies that are this good. It's so hard to talk about.
Do you know the sheriff, the devil sheriff in this movie? You know what he's from? He's the rival sheriff from Super Troopers.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah. The Spurbury Police.
Yeah, he's Chief Grady from the Spurbury Police that covers Farva in fucking powdered sugar.
Delicious, sir. Yeah, the lice hate that.
But I don't know.
Then they come to a point where everything starts kind of
convolving.
Yeah, that's the word I was trying to think of. But then I wasn't sure what the word.
Coalescing
at the end because
what's convalescing mean?
Convalescing is rotting in place, like you go to a convalescent home.
Coalescing.
Well, the governor is holding a rally or having a rally or something or a debate maybe because he wants to get reelected. He's getting his dick kicked off by this other guy.
Who's a
clown. The other guy ends up being the head of the KKK, the local head of the KKK. The Soggy Bottom Boys save Tommy.
Tommy is the Robert Johnson character.
Yeah. He's a black musician who sold his soul to the devil earlier. And the KKK is about to lynch him. They save him. They throw a flag like a javelin and almost hit Big Dan in the face, and he just catches it. He just fucking beast mode it.
That's hilarious.
And then they cut the wire on the cross, and the cross kills him. The Soggy Bottom Boys go back to. I forget how exactly they get there. But they go to the rally where was it Papio Daniels?
No, it's for Homer. It's a Homer Stokes rally, and they're there to try and get the little Warby girls. He wants to go woo his children back from his wife back. But they're
18. His 18 kids that are walked together through town with like string around.
So they're going to. At this rally,
this might be my favorite scene in the whole movie, and a movie full of scenes that like I absolutely love. They start playing In Constant Sorrow, and the place goes absolutely apeshit. And the look on Clooney's face, because they just recorded that song that one time to make.
Yeah, like, they have no idea $3. That it become a big hit.
They had no idea that it was like.
Yeah, because there's a parallel plot where you find out that like someone goes to see Stephen Root and they're like, "You got to find me the Saga Bottom Boys." There's a
Stephen Root also great in this as always. Like
there's a montage where they're like, "Do you have?" Man, a constant sorrow, but sorry, ma'am, we can't keep it on the shelf.
We can order it. Yeah, we can order it for you.
That first scene with Stephen Root, where he's like, "Well, four of us can sign our names, but then Aloysius and Steve would have to put X's."
Also, in that scene, no one could say accompanist. They're like, "My accompanist, our guy with a guitar."
Also, doesn't he say like they think that they want him to do like Negro spirituals?
Do you do Negro music?
We're
all Negroes, sir, except for our accompanist, our guitar player. It's like, "Well, I'll do Negro music. Well, we can do old timey stuff."
Maybe it's just how he says it. It sounded like he used a different word, but maybe
he may have. But I'm not going to.
He definitely is a different word.
Stephen Root is like the part,
he's blind. It's funny that he's blind without glasses, so he's just like he's got this weird like crazy look on his face.
The way he says "That's a mighty fine picking and a singing" is like lives rent free in my head.
Did anybody else? I mean, I know it's a different accent, but it's very close to his Dale in this.
It is,
and I was it kind of reminded me of Dale. I was like, "Oh shit, it's Dale."
And the conversation he has with the other radio music guy, it's like, "Well, we got to sign him, otherwise the competition will." It's like, "Oh Lord, no, not the competition!" Like,
the competition? I mean, Paul, that dude, fucking Stephen Root is fucking great.
Yeah,
he's always good. All right, we want to just do scores because I mean, we just talk about every scene.
Like, which is whatever. Should we do Sean's score first?
We'll which do I Sean presume first.
Might be the lowest.
Do you have? Hold on.
I got it right here.
Oh, you got it. Go ahead. Then you go ahead.
Yeah, it's gonna be. No, don't worry. This movie is a 9. Tim Blake Nelson should be in more stuff. Roger Deakins is based. I might have given it a 10.
Roger Deakins is the cinematographer, and the cinematography in this is absolutely amazing.
The whole thing's like sepia tone. So it's beautiful.
Yeah.
I might have given it a 10, but I think I've seen it too many times. It's like their fourth best movie. Also, only one of them directed it and one of them produced it. I thought they typically—is that what they typically do?
I mean,
they both wrote it. They both were credited writing it.
They always kind of do that, though. It's like, and they're both on the set at the same time, so you know what I mean. While maybe one is credited as the director, it's still their movie. You know what I mean? Like,
so it's a 9 for Sean.
Okay.
I mean, I'll just lead right back into that and just say that it's a 10 for me. I love this. When this was picked, I could not have been happier. I love everything about this movie. I love the music. I love the acting. It's my favorite George Clooney performance, and I think George Clooney is a hell of an actor. Totoro's great in it. Tim Blake Nelson's great in it. John Goodman's great in it for the little bit that he's in. He's just chewing the scenery. Like, he is just – talk about George Clooney dripping charisma. Like, John Goodman's scene in this movie, he just steals the show. I wouldn't change a thing about this, and I love it. So it's a 10. TJ.
I also adore this movie. I do, in a sense, agree with Sean. I don't think it's the best Coen Brothers movie, but it is like very, very, very good. So it's a 10 for me, dog. I love this movie. I mean, it's rare. I mean, we've watched good movies on the podcast, and I feel like over the last couple of years, I feel like we definitely try to watch good stuff, not just all shit. But like, I don't think we watch movies like on this level. It's just like, it also is like just kind of airy and fun, right? Like, it's not like there's no like deeper overtones, like the stuff that I usually like with like that's. It's a really good movie, but it like leaves you feeling depressed and sad. Like, this is like a uplifting, sweet movie that anybody can enjoy. I love it. Like Gog just said, he took the words out of my mouth. I don't think there's a choice in this movie that's a bad choice. Like, I love every aspect of this film, from the casting to the writing to the score to the fucking the way it looks. Like, it's just a beautiful film, top to bottom, and it's just a great movie. I mean, it's like a time capsule movie. Like, this is an achievement. Like, it's great. I loved it. So yeah, it's a 10 for me, dog. Alec.
It's also going to be a 10. Like,
yeah,
this, This movie slapped. It's personally my favorite Coen Brothers movie. But man, everybody's so good in it. George Clooney is just the most charming. And he's so Tim Blake good. Nelson, Tim Blake Nelson, and John Turturro are perfect as his counterparts, and the perfect foils to each other. Because he had like sweet, kind of stupid, naive Tim Blake Nelson, and then hot-headed, stupid John Turturro, who goes wherever his emotions take him. But yeah, man, this movie fucking slaps.
But even when they're, and I think that's sweet, even when they're at odds with each other, they're still like buddies. Like they never, you know what I mean? Like they're in fight, but they're still like, you know what I mean? It never gets
like John Turturro's character is hilarious because like he was going to kill his cousin for turning him in. But then scene later, when Everett stole his watch, he's like, how dare you steal from my kid? Right. Like, what the hell?
This is a movie I need to watch more often. I haven't seen it in years, probably at least 10 years, maybe longer. Like, this is a movie I need to revisit more often.
Agreed.
Because George Clooney's in a lot of, like, sad, serious stuff now.
Yeah.
Well, you think back here, he was doing, like, Ocean's movies. He was doing this. He was doing a lot more, like, fun, upbeat kind of stuff. And, like, it'd be nice to see him get back to that. I know The Men Who Stare at The Men Who Stare at Goats?
Burn After That's Reading. Not, is he in both of reading. Those?
He's in both of those, yes.
He is in both, but I was thinking Burn After Reading. Like, after that wasn't that long ago, but that still has probably been at least 10 years since that came out. Maybe longer.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't do, like, the funny stuff anymore. He's more into, like, serious roles. As far as I know, like, I don't follow his career. The last thing I saw him in, I think, was that movie about the spaceship coming back, and he's in Antarctica, like, by himself on the...
Oh, yeah, what the hell was that called?
I can't remember the name of it. It had, like, some of the best spaceship set design I've ever seen in my life.
Was that the one with the skeletonized stuff, and it was like...
Yeah.
Basically warned them not to come home because it was the planet was destroyed or what was that called?
Yeah, he was in like the last remote safe area, but it was still about to be like taken over, and he's warning them not to come.
The Midnight Sky.
Yeah, good title. I remember liking that when I saw it, but like it clearly didn't leave much of an imprint on me because I barely remember the plot. I just remember the set design being tremendous. But yeah, it's a 10.
Oh yeah,
sort of fucking slaps. Slapped hard.
Oh yeah.
So what's up next week?
Next week is my birthday pick, Bitches.
Oh yeah, did you figure it out?
I did. And then despite the fact that it's my birthday, I'm gonna give a present to listener Anthony. He has been bothering me to watch this movie called The Old Man and the Gun, starring Robert Redford, Tom Waits, directed by David Lowery, who directed The Green Knight and Ghost Story. And we're going to watch that. It's a like crime movie. Anthony has been crowing about it. It says it's his like fucking favorite movie. And I was going to pick something weird. This was going to be the year I was going to make you guys watch Tetsuo the Iron Man, but I decided not to. So we're going to watch The Old Man and the Gun. It's already on the Plex. I'm looking forward to it. I've been meaning to watch it for months now. And I figure if I make it my pick, I will force me to watch it. So I'm looking forward to it. I like David Lowery a lot. We've watched Robert Redford in a couple of things. He's generally pretty good. And I love Tom Waits. So, yeah. Neat. So, yeah, it's Old Man and the Gun. That's my birthday.
Tom Waits, is he the one from Mystery Men?
Yeah. Yes. And from he was in The Book of Eli. Remember, he was like the junk salesman. He was Renfield in Bram Stoker's Dracula.
I believe he's also in Domino.
Yes, he is in Domino. Tom Waits is in a lot of stuff. He's a good actor. I actually like Tom Waits as an actor. I love him as a musician, but I love
And he sings one of my favorite renditions of the opening credits to The Wire. I think he's season 2.
Oh, yeah. Also, Goggs, he's in Seven Psychopaths, a movie I know
you're he's one of the best parts of a movie that's just that movie.
Speaking of the Coen brothers, he's in one of my favorite parts of Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Remember, he's the prospector, and he's like, oh, Mr. Pocket. Like, I love that part of the movie. So, yeah.
I don't know. Tom Waits. To the Wire theme song?
Say what?
Are there words?
When you walk through the garden, better watch your back.
I guess I just think of that first part of the guitar, like boom, boom, boom.
Yeah, every season has a different blues artist sing the I think it's an actual blues song. They just used it for the theme song. But Tom Waits is either season 2 or season 4.
I probably hit skip Tom intro Waits every rocks. Time when I watched it.
Yeah, I generally do that now too.
Yeah, right to the murder.
All right, everybody, that's the show. We'll see you next week, hopefully at full power. But we'll see. Yep. And I'll be 49 years old, however the fuck old I am. I can't wait.
Hey.
Yep. The old 4-3.
Good.
Add it up and you get 7.
Holy shit, dude. I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Basically really, 7. Really makes you think. All right. See everybody.
Good night, boys.